Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, friends. Welcome to the program. This is Mud Toe at Midnight. I am your host, Mud Toe Sasquatch. And I would like to read something at you as we start today. A little passage about shamanism. Shamanism is neither a religion nor a philosophy. The shaman finds it easy to believe in something transcendent because he possesses direct knowledge of the infinite worlds that form reality. He travels humbly through them, dealing with the spirits who live there so he might gain wisdom and power, never for his own personal benefit, but for the common good. For the shaman, the world we live in is a tiny portion of the universal reality. Thanks to the profound perception of things, the shaman realizes that every being and everything is inhabited by a spirit, that even what we consider to be arid and inanimate is actually alive. And those are the words of Massimiliano Filadoro, who created the Shaman Tarot, which I use every week, and which I'm going to just go ahead and use now, since we're talking about it. I have drawn the Knight of Drums tonight, and it is a female figure in, I guess you would call that primitive dress. I don't know. So from, I look at that and I think more medieval than primitive, but it's a red-colored skin-tight, thinning type, like almost a warrior outfit with a cape behind it, and she's riding a white buffalo. And they're riding pretty hard. And they're going across a desert landscape with some mountains in the background and a very dark sky. And the description of the knight is ally of the earth. And what would you call it? It's just the characteristics are unstoppable action, my goodness, these glasses are unstoppable action, inspiration from above, insensitivity towards others' feelings. Wow. That last one isn't very good, is it? I guess maybe not all of the shaman tarot characteristics are good ones. What was that? Let's read it again. It was insensitivity towards others' feelings. Well, that's something he's going to have to work on. It's something we have to work on, I guess, as well, since we're seeing the card. The card is for us. I'm looking at this image again, and it's the charging white buffalo, and this is how I differentiated this. I'm still not entirely clear on which ones are the knaves and which ones are the knights. I figured this from the description of they said it's this unstoppable force, and he got this tremendous white buffalo just charging through the desert, so I made that connection, that that's what we were looking at. He's in a hurry, he's got a purpose, which is something I feel like I'm lacking these days. And go back to my description of my last few days, not a lot getting done. I'm not scheduled to work at all next week until on Friday. I have to go in for training. A big assignment the following week, which would be 20 to 5 to 30 hours, which is the most I've worked in a long time. But earlier this week, and this is something I put, if you saw the announcement on Facebook where I talked about them, I can't even remember what I called it, something about the health fair at midnight or something. I was called to work a late shift event, which I'd never done before. And it happened at the hospital, which is just a few blocks down from where I live, so that made it convenient. But the event started at 10 p.m. and ran through the 1:30 in the morning. I haven't worked that late since I had a job at one time working with people with mental challenges. And there's one client that I would two or three nights a week would spend the night at the house, and then I'd have actually it was a group of clients that had to make sure they got up in the morning and got to work. That was my primary duty. The rest of the time was basically, watching Craig Ferguson. And that may have been, I can't say it was difficult work, but boy, it was a challenge. because I'm supposed to stay awake, and you're awake when you don't have anything to do. Just kept counting the meds over and over again. Not a job. I mean, it was a job that had a purpose. You know, I felt like I was doing something that needed to be doing, but not something I would particularly care to go back for or go back to, especially since I felt like those of us who were doing the grunt work weren't necessarily supported by those who were above us. You know, we were asked to do our jobs in certain ways that, you know, didn't seem to be the best. Well, I mean, you're supposed to count the meds and you're supposed to be kept list and all that. And in actual fact, that didn't seem to be all that. I shouldn't get into this. This is getting into confidentiality stuff now. I wasn't happy doing the work. I didn't feel that we were supported, that those of us on the front lines were supported in the way we needed to be. That's really all I need to say about that. So it had been a while since I had been up past midnight doing something that was, you know, paying me money. The hospital, I want to say something about the hospital itself first. It's an older hospital. I think it dates back, the oldest parts of the hospital date back to the 30s and 40s. And it's centered around a nursing school, and it's a Roman Catholic facility. And most of the hospitals in our city now are owned by one entity. So there's this sort of balancing act that goes on between the religious and the secular, which is interesting to see the results of that and see the signs that are posted and the things said to you by people that you taught, the nursing staff and the chaplain came by at one point. But the idea of the event was they were bringing nurses from the shift down, and they had like sort of a little party for them, a little street fair almost, where they'd set up games for them to play, and had popcorn and fruit and orange juice and stuff for them to sort of stroll around. But then the games had an educational purpose to them. You know, these are the ideas that we're supposed to be thinking about concerning patient care and respect for patients. And so my role in this was I was supposed to lay in a hospital bed and cough a lot. And one of the nurses running the things was supposed to like stand in front of me and be disrespectful to me. And so this is what I did for 3.5 hours. I mean, there'd be lulls, and I wasn't coughing constantly for 3.5 hours. There would be lulls, and I'd get to talk to this nurse who was in charge of me, and she was the head nurse of the entire maternity department. She's someone who had been at this hospital for a long time and had seen a lot of changes. And I guess there's a really big change coming down the pipe in a few years. The hospital is basically going to be shut down. They're going to build a new one out in the suburbs, and this one here, sitting here in the city, is going to be phased out. Now, I guess the old nursing school is going to continue to be here, and the emergency room will continue to be here, and the rest of the space is still going to be used. They're going to have, you know, other doctors and things move in. So that part of it's good. I mean, they're not just knocking the thing down, and, you know, there's going to be a smoking hole there where the hospital used to be. There's still going to be patient care going on. It's just if you want a hospital, you're going to have to go to the suburbs, or you have to go. We have one inner city hospital, but I don't have any personal experience with that hospital. I know my mother was in it once when she had my brother, but that was 41 years ago. What my caseworker told me this. She said that they never seem to admit anybody. People go to the emergency room, and then she goes, because it's part of her job is to pick people up from when they've had treatment and take them home. Well, she'll call them up. Yes, I understand my client was admitted to emergency, and she'll find that they sent the client someplace else. And so she says she doesn't even know what the rest of the hospital looks like. She's never had anybody actually admitted to that hospital. See, I almost said the word. Dun, 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 dun. I don't know why I even worry about that. I mean, I live in Columbus, Ohio. The hospital I'm talking about is Mount Carmel West. The inner city hospital is Grant's Hospital. And that and about, so those two and about 10 other hospitals are owned by Ohio Health. And that's, I mean, that's the situation. You have one sort of massive healthcare part. There's the Ohio Health Complex, and then there's the Ohio State University Hospital Complex, which I work most of the time for. And my boss has kind of a, I don't know what the word would be. She says she takes, you know, the effort. You know, the other, when we work for other hospitals outside of the OSU system, we work for hospitals in the Ohio health system, they don't train any of their own standardized patients. They grab the ones from Ohio State who have already been trained, and then my boss says, you know, we train everybody, and then Ohio Health comes and tries to take them away. But they don't have Ohio Health doesn't have near enough hours to really take anybody away, so that's good. I enjoy working for Ohio State. I worked at Ohio State as a computer lab supervisor for many years while I was working on my PhD. There's a lot, and then I did my undergrad at Ohio State many, many years ago. Many things have changed about it. I don't think they're all for the good, but I still like being a part of it. Maybe that thing about, you know, maybe working from within. To change from within, maybe, possibly, might happen. Well, anyway, I was particularly disturbed about the hospital closing because the hospital has a tower I'm going to guess about 8 stories high, maybe 10 stories high. I never actually counted. I've never been in the tower, but it was part of the original nursing school, and it also has a spiritual purpose, sort of a call to worship kind of thing. You know, the tower rises up above the rest of the neighborhood. It's just a residential neighborhood. There aren't any other tall buildings around. And the tower rises up above it and says, you know, here we are. here's a religious place. You know, not a church, but a place where religion is distributed in the form of medicine, I guess. But the tower, I guess, is coming down. It's got some structural problems. All this information came to me from that nurse who was working with me at the health fair. She said the old tower is going to come down because it has structural problems and they can't afford to fix it. You know, it's easier to just take it down than it is to fix it. So that disturbed me a bit because my first night here in my apartment. On the west side. Now, I was feeling very, very lonesome, very isolated. None of my friends live around here. I later found out one of my friends lives around here, but you know, I haven't seen her too often either. She's not a big fan of this neighborhood. But in any event, I was just looking out my front window, and I saw this this structure, you know, and it's capped with a bunch of lights. They put a bunch of lights on the top, a bunch of LED lights. You know, the ones that gradually kind of change color, you know, the orange to pink to blue to purple, that sort of thing. I'm looking at this thing and I said, what the hell is that? And I had to investigate it the next day, and I discovered the tower and that it was associated with the hospital. And that structure sort of became, you know, a friend to me. You know, I could look, you know, when I went out the door in the morning, there was the tower. And when I come back home at night, you know, there's the tower, and it's a part of the neighborhood. It's probably in many ways, you know, the best friend I have in the neighborhood. It's kind of brought to me when I was reading that passage about shamanism and what shamanism means, and the realization that even inanimate things have a life to them, a spirit, an intelligence, or wisdom that come with them. And the fact that this tower is probably the best friend that I have who's in this area. You probably get some competition from the lady who makes pizzas across the street because I get over there quite a bit. And she's nice. And we talk about old movies sometimes because I told her I like the old movie series at the Ohio Pier. And we were able to talk about a number of the films I had seen that she appreciated. So that was nice. But probably she would definitely be my closest human acquaintance here as far as all beings. I think the tower, just for sentimental purposes, the tower might have to be number one. And I had a similar experience some years ago, and it forms the basis for the lead story in this book I keep promising to write. The story is called The Grandfather Tree, and that's what the name of the book is going to be. And it was a tree that I discovered on the path where I used to walk every day, you know, outside of my old apartment. And it had been felled in a windstorm. And at one time it had been this, you know, magnificent tall tree, and now, you know, it was humbled. It was laid low. And I could feel this sort of mournful energy come from it. That, you know, this, you know, look what's happened to me, kind of energy. And there's no one here to sort of assuage that pain. So I took it upon myself to do that. I went to fortunately for me, a tobacconist very nearby, because tobacco is sacred. In many Native American cultures, it's the greatest offering you can make is an offering of tobacco. So I went and I got some, trusting that the source of the tobacco wouldn't change its power as a spiritual palliative. So I got that and I got my flute. I got what else did I take down? I took something to make sacred smoke. I don't think I had any sage. I think I may have just had some incense that I took. And my blanket. And I went down there and I sat in front of the tree, and I got out some of the tobacco and burned it along with some of the incense. And I sang a song. And then I went to the tree with the tobacco, which was a bit daunting because it was a forest. It wasn't really a cleared area. Forest is probably overstating to say it wasn't a cleared area. And of course, I'm thinking about snakes and bugs and that sort of thing. But I got around to where I sort of had access to the tree, and I was looking for the areas where it was wounded. You know, where the splits had happened. We could see the wood had been, you know, had been split apart. And I put I sprinkled tobacco in those areas, and I said a prayer, thanking the tree for everything it had done for we humans over the years. You know, had given us lots of oxygen, given us a pleasant place to sit, you know, shade, had been beautiful. You know, something that we could appreciate aesthetically. So I offered the tobacco and as thanks to the tree for having done all of that. And then I sat down and it was at that point that I played my flute. And I could feel a relief. I could feel a calming. Now, one might ask, did that come from the tree or did it come from me? You know, was I the one who had been relieved? Was I the one who had been calmed and the tree didn't have anything to do with it? I will quote a meditation teacher of mine who used to say all the time, does it matter? Does the sound come from inside of your head or outside of your head? Does it matter? Did the relief belong to the tree or did the relief belong to me? Doesn't matter. I felt it either way. So every time I had an opportunity, I walked that path daily. As weather permitted, and I would always stop and say something to the tree, and I call it my grandfather tree. Now, for the story that I'm writing in the book, I've embellished it in some ways. I've brought in actually some other story fragments, other things that I couldn't find, you know, part of a story that I couldn't find a beginning for, part of a story I couldn't find an ending for, and then I sort of rolled all of those into the tree story. And made it something different, but with the same feel. It has the same sort of lesson. I'm finding that that's useful because I have a whole lot of story fragments. As I said, you know, this is great, but I don't know how it ends. Boy, this is great, but I don't know how it begins. And then I find just out of a bolt out of the blue will come. Well, why don't I stick that beginning onto that ending and see what happens? And sometimes very, very interesting things happen when you do that. You find out this one character that you've been, that I'll speak for myself, that I've been struggling with, struggling to find a place for, now all of a sudden there's a place for that character. And it didn't even dream. I thought that character was supposed to be in a different story, but actually he's a character in this story. I'd written a piece, I was working on a rather long piece about a local rock and roll guitar player, very famous in the city where he lived, whose life had sort of gotten away from him, and he was trying to claw his way back. And I was writing it as an interview, you know, like the first person presence was an interviewer, and he was talking to this guitarist. And I thought, boy, this is really clever, but it seems to be clever as an exercise in writing. It doesn't seem, I mean, you get to the end of it, and it's like, you know, what? You know, what was that all about? So that was, you know, that was a fragment. That was a story with what I felt was a great beginning, a pretty good middle, but no ending. I had written this other piece, which was... it was a very strange, it was a very weird piece. It was something I had written on a dare from Chief Iggy. Dare isn't quite the right word. He's trying to help me get me off the schneid, you know, to get me writing again. And he gave me some suggestions for strange stories that I could write. And he had suggested the care and feeding. Write a story about the care and feeding of a Yorkshire Terrier. And I had done that, but I had thrown in this little bit. Well, actually, I shouldn't tell you. In case you ever read the story, I don't want you to know how it ends. I had thrown in a very kind of strange ending, just a really weird twist ending to this story that was all about how you take care of a Yorkshire Terrier. And then I said, well, I want to work with this a little more. I want to make this, you know, a little better. But again, I didn't have how did we get to that point? You know, I liked the ending that I had written, but how did the thing with the instructions wasn't going to fly as a story. I had to have the actual beginning for the story. And just one day, just driving down the street one day, it just hit me that this guy I was writing about, guitarist I was writing about, was the guy who was taking care of the Yorkshire Terrier. And the Yorkshire Terrier story wasn't about the dog at all. It was his story. And about how this dog became his sort of alter ego during his process of rise and fall and rise. And then what happens at the end of this weird thing that happens at the end of the story almost becomes the dog's judgment on all the things the dude had said to him in 30 years. The dog could make that, you know, he could be a, you know, judge and jury. An interview character really couldn't because he was supposed to be neutral. So just as a process of, you just don't know how these things are going to turn out. I just wish I had the guts to share these with some people. Because my brother, he just published a story on Kindle. And tell his friends about it. I got to tell the story on Tindall. And he's in another play, too, so I'm going to have to go back and see that. I love my brother, and I'm glad he's having success. But it is annoying. It's really, really annoying. I suppose I could go out. I've been doing this singing at the Blue Pickle. And it was nice. That's we added a couple more songs to my set. And then the boss guy asked me to sing another song that was one of his songs. I heard him sing it the week before. So he was nice enough to give up one of his songs so I could have something else to sing, which was nice. And now we're setting up a rehearsal for Sunday. So actually I do have something to do this week. I have to go on Sunday and rehearse a few more songs. This could be good. I mean, it's not... we haven't gotten to the point like where people are coming to see us yet so I could get feedback from an actual audience. But the feedback I'm getting from the other musicians is good, and the feedback I'm getting from the guy who owns the bar is good. I had one lady who was very thrilled. I sang King of the Road, and her father, who was in his 90s now, had always sung that song to her when she was a girl, and she was just thrilled to hear it, and I was thrilled to be able to bring that energy to her. I hope I sang it well enough. It's always my my doubt of myself is I don't think I sing the songs well enough. But I guess, you know, it's a matter of practice. Certainly singing is amazingly spiritual. One connects with something deep within oneself, as you say. So you hit a bad note, and then you come crashing back to earth. That's basically what I have going right now. It's what's pushing me forward. Is I go to that, I go to lessons, and then to sing at the Blue Pickle on Wednesdays. Now, not this coming week, but the week after next, I have some work to do. So that'll be nice. I wonder about this book. I feel strongly about the book. I like the stories. The stories that have entertained me in my head for a long time, and they keep growing and changing. Maybe that's one of the points of resistance. Is if I write the stories down, then they're done. You know, they're stuck that way. Perhaps I'm resisting that in my mind. Maybe I am a lazy bum. Maybe that's the problem. I just can't force myself. I was so close to writing something at the library today, but it was very loud, and I couldn't get in to concentrate. And then I was trying to log into my website, and I couldn't get in, which might possibly mean that my registration has expired again, which would be a problem because I can't possibly pay to re-register. But the website is still there if you want to look at it. I don't know, can't guarantee how long it'll be there, but it is still there if you want to look at mudtoastsasquatch.com. It's just a collection of things that I've written, a lot of which I like. I can't say I actively dislike any of them. I wouldn't have, you know, shared them if I had disliked them. You know, some I look at them and say that it's sort of juvenilia or just unworthy of my genius. I don't know. There's a lot of stuff in there that I like, and a lot of it that you will probably recognize in the book. If it ever does get done, you will see it. You will go to your Kindle, and you will make your love offering to my soul. Oh, please, because Shaman does not live by sage alone. Even with government services, you can't live with sage alone. Do we have time? There's like 2 minutes left, because I've still got walk in dry places I could do. October the 10th, putting our trust in people. How much should we trust other people? This is an important question because many of us have erred in both directions. We've trusted people too much or not enough. We can find our answer in the spiritual side of the program. We do have a higher power in whom we can have absolute trust. We can have little doubt that the spiritual presence behind everything is infallible and supreme. As human beings, we know that we can only be trusted in certain ways. We can only work to develop our trustworthiness, but is never high enough, even with the strongest souls. All of us have weaknesses that can keep us from being what we know to be our best. In our 12-step living, we should work to develop trust in both ourselves and others, but not to be hurt or disappointed when things go wrong. Above all, our real trust should be in our higher power. Okay. That's another kind of 12-steppy one tonight, but that's okay. There's some good words in there. So let's think about those over the next week and reconvene in this time and place on Mudso at midnight's Eastern time every week here on Blog Talk Radio. I thank you for joining me this evening, and wish you a pleasant good night.